Welcome to the Jackalcast.
Hello, this is Steven.
And this is Steven.
And this is the Jackalcast. Believe it or not, back after an uncertain hiatus, as they all are going to be. Let's just face it. We're on our own schedule. We're rebels.
Although we're building up, we should have, you know, maybe more than one episode by itself. We might get two in a row.
But anyway, we have an exciting interview today, don't we?
I think so. Kevin Roche and Andy Tremblay.
Yes.
Who are the chairman of WesterCon 66, which will be happening in Sacramento, California in 2013. They have chaired CostumeCon previously. If you have been to a Bay Area convention in the last, 10, 15, 20 years, you have undoubtedly seen them. If you don't know their names, that doesn't mean you haven't met them. You just don't know their names.
Exactly. Or quite possibly you already know them and wondering why we're yammering on about them like this.
So we will be talking to them today about their bid for WesterCon 66, which started as a joke and became an actual convention.
So yes, here are Kevin Roche and Andy Tremblay. So we are here with the chairman of an upcoming convention. But which one is it?
We are chairing WesterCon 66, which will be July 4th weekend, 2013 in Sacramento.
And what in God's name possessed you to co-chair the WesterCon? As I understand it, your chairing this convention was not planned significantly in advance.
It wasn't planned at all in advance.
We threw a party.
We threw a good party.
And it beat the real bid.
Yeah, WesterCon travels around the western area of North America, and there's a campaign process, a bid process to earn the right to run the convention. And Portland was bidding to run the convention, and we decided in a fit of silliness, realizing that we had a suite at the hotel where the vote was going to take place, and we were going to landlord a party for the London Worldcon bid party, which, by the way, is totally serious, and they're really actually putting a lot of work into this. But we would campaign for Olive Country in California, which is to say an Italian deli an hour north of Sacramento on Interstate 5.
Which is a lovely place.
Granzella's Deli, it's fabulous, great food, great gourmet stuff, excellent, almost wholesale price rice, and not a bad place to stop if you're driving up or down I-5 and you're a bit north of Sacramento.
Now, it's important to note that there's a grand tradition of joke and hoax bids in the process. If you have space for a party and you want to pretend you're bidding, this has been going on for decades. So the fact that we did a hoax is all part of fanish tradition. Only once or twice has one taken off and actually threatened the real bids. And in fact, the process that happened after our party was built because of the last big hoax.
Yeah, almost 30 years ago, a race between Portland and Phoenix, there's Portland again, a race between Portland and Phoenix with a 4th of July and a Wednesday, with one city bidding for the weekend before the 4th, the other city bidding for the weekend after, was suddenly overwhelmed by a bid for both. Start in one city, hop on the train, have a convention on the train, finish in the other city. There are many people who will hem and haw about what happened. Someone that I know who was there actually confirmed that the ballot for both won. And then there was a backroom deal-making process to have one of the official bids drop out, thus invalidating the existence of both and allowing the convention to be thrown to the other city, because both would have probably killed the convention.
In our case, we recognized a couple days before the convention that things had gone viral, and in fact, we might win, and that Portland might be in trouble. So when it happened, we decided that we would, having lit the fuse on the situation, step up and offer to actually chair a convention. And after a 2+ hour business meeting where Portland got to pitch again And we and two other groups pitched. The members present voted to award WesterCon 66 to us. I have to say that the Gene Armstrong, who chaired the Portland bid, we've gotten to know him a bit better, and we've seen him in action running a convention in Seattle, and he is an astonishingly competent con runner, but he wasn't prepared for the campaign aspect of the bid process, and that was what sank Portland's bid.
But it's not happening actually at Granzella's, so tell us where WesterCon 66 will be.
Well, we decided that we wanted to stay true to the Sacramento Valley roots of our bid. But yeah, Granzella's, there's some problems. This year's WesterCon in Seattle had slightly over 800 live bodies at the convention and over 1,000 registered members. Granzella's has a 43-room hotel with one banquet room. It's not quite big enough.
Right.
And it's also an hour north of Sacramento on I-5. And we were asked when we were bidding, so how can you get to Granzella's? Well, you can drive there.
Right.
Or you can fly into Sacramento and rent a car and drive there.
Right.
Or you can fly into Sacramento and have a friend pick you up and drive you there. Or you can take the train into Sacramento and more of the same.
Right.
Because this is a town so small that the Greyhound doesn't even stop there anymore. So we looked and said, we can't do Granzella's. And we actually really don't want to do Granzella's because, much like both, it would actually kill the convention. And we don't want to kill the convention. We want to have a good convention. So we started looking at Sacramento. It's an hour away from where we were bidding. And there's not a lot of general science fiction convention activity in Sacramento.
There are, however, lots and lots of science fiction fans. And the last time WesterCon was in Sacramento was 26 years ago. So Sacramento fans were responsible in large part for the San Francisco Worldcon in 93, which was the last major convention they worked on. So they have been coming out of the woodwork wanting to get involved because, first, they love the idea of having a big convention in their town, and second, they want to learn more about how to run it since their con runners aren't around anymore.
So, Steve, what do you think about a science fiction convention in the Sacramento area?
Well, I like it a lot because it's right down the street from my house. You know, I get to experience this joy that all you Bay Area folks have of like, oh yeah, the convention's right near me. Yeah, I don't know what that's like. I have to drive 2.5 hours just to go to meetings.
So the first thing, the hotel we're using is the Hilton Sacramento Arden West near Arden Fair Mall. And you'll learn the excitement of commuting a convention, or if you're smart, getting a hotel room, even though the convention's only 3 miles from your house.
We, in fact, recommend that choice because you're not going to miss what goes on late at night.
True.
No, absolutely. I will always recommend to people who are going to the convention to, you know, get a hotel, even if they're close by, because, you know, part of the experience of a convention is being in the hotel where the convention is.
And there's the whole thing. When the Worldcon was in San Jose, we looked at this and said, oh, yeah, we'll save a bunch of money on flights. Well, it turned into the most expensive WorldCon we've ever attended.
Because we spent our airfare on a suite instead.
And through parties. So, yes, God save me from a hometown WorldCon. It's fun, but it takes a little while to recover from.
So how did the two of you get involved in the convention world?
Oh, those are old stories. I mean, Kevin's stories are older than my stories.
Thanks a lot, dear. I first went to a Star Trek convention when I was in high school. Friends took me. It was at UC Davis. I don't even remember who organized it. I think it was actually one of the student body groups, probably the Star Trek Club. And my first real organized convention was when I was at Berkeley. I went to a Fantasy Worlds Festival, which is a Darkover fandom, and met a whole bunch of really wonderful artists and authors. I wasn't that big a Darkover fan, but I met Diana Paxson and John DeCleese and Marion Zimmer Bradley, that whole family, and actually was sort of adopted into the household. And so I then started hearing about these other things and add to that my costuming, and I was swept into the world of costume fandom as well. So that's what got me started. It took me a while to educate fandom that I could actually talk about things other than funny clothes because my day job actually is in spintronics research. So I sometimes get to talk about my day job and do hard science now as well.
when I decided to go back to school, I moved to Milwaukee and fell in with a rather fanish crowd. I actually got into this through the SCA in Medieval Recreation and met some people into who were into science fiction and were doing science fiction convention things in Milwaukee. And then I moved there and I was told, well, Minicon's coming up in 2 months and it's in Minneapolis and that's only a 6-hour drive from here because, you know, our local convention is on hold this year, but Minicon's coming up and it's a lot of fun and someone has got a hotel room that you can share and you can go to the convention. And well, that was when Minicon was in its big growth phase and it was barely under 3,000 people and it was nonstop from the moment I got there Friday afternoon until the moment I left Sunday afternoon. And the next year I showed up on Thursday and didn't leave until Tuesday. And then I started finding other conventions in the area, but I didn't really get involved in working on conventions until I moved out to California. But it was a good time and a good fit and a lot of fun.
So have you guys ever run a convention before?
Yes.
No, never, not in a million years.
Before I met Andy, I mean, I knew authors and such who worked on local conventions, but I first got sucked into helping with running conventions through the Masquerade because I had friends here in the Bay Area who were huge Blake 7 fans, and there was a little Blake 7 convention called ORAC, and they wanted to have a Masquerade, and they needed someone to run it. And I wasn't a huge Blake 7 fan. So I wouldn't be going gaga over the stars who would be judging. I could treat them like judges.
Right.
And so I ran the ORAC Masquerade a couple years in a row. And when Andy and I met, Andy was actually far more plugged into the con running circles in the Midwest than I was out here. And we were watching. And along the way, I'd done some charity work. Where I'd had to organize lots of small charity events at bars and such. So I had learned I had a knack for assembling a show and a knack for promoting shows.
Right.
So we were looking at CostumeCon and noticed that it was shrinking. Hmm. And we realized the biggest problem was that it was only advertising to people who already went to CostumeCon.
Oh, and by the way, the 26th CostumeCon would be our 10th anniversary.
Yes, because we met at CostumeCon 16. So we started a 5-year campaign, 2 years of bidding and then 3 years of promoting after we won the bid. It was rather a juggernaut. Mm-hmm. The League of Evil Geniuses Hall of Fame party, we hosted some 50 times over 5 years. So when CostumeCon 26 came around, we had almost 900 attendees. The year before, had 280 attendees, and the year after had 450. So that effort and that long-term effort to get out there and promote and think about the whole weekend and how to do it showed that we actually had a clue. So having run a convention and helped with lots of conventions, when the Olive Country campaign became a live grenade, we talked about it and talked to a couple key people to make sure we'd have support and we could walk into the business meeting and say, we are prepared to do this. Now on the side, I've also been doing conferences for work, which is, I have even left notice because usually I have about 6 months to organize one of these workshops. And I'm usually dealing with room and board for those. Mm-hmm. So they're small, they're 100 or 120 people, but I have lots of practice at doing the logistics and managing the craziness that is a conference.
True. You guys are also famous for your Evil Genius parties. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the first Evil Genius party was just for fun.
And it was actually a spin out of a previous party that we had done with friends. We decided that we were local in San Jose. We could do a party on a Friday night at a convention because it was actually easy to get there. Whereas they were driving up from Los Angeles and they were going to not be in any state to actually organize and run anything until Saturday. And we said, we can get a party room for 2 nights and we can do a party on Friday. And you can do a party on Saturday. And that was a very, very happy agreement. And we decided to do the Evil Genius Hall of Fame.
So we put out calls for people's favorite fictional villains. And we had some 55 offered for that first party. And then I ran a poll for the top 12. And I decided
we ended up with 15.
I made posters for the top 15 because that way I got to include Bun Bun and Mojo Jojo. And so when we decided to bid Costume Con, we decided to use the Evil Genius Hall of Fame as our promotional theme for the bid and promotional parties. And so each time we threw it, we added to the gallery. If it was a themed convention, we would try to add 5 or 10 villains that met the theme. So first time we did it at a Doctor Who convention, we found Who villains. And when we did it at the LA Worldcon, because it was the anniversary of Star Trek, the original series, we had a whole set of original Trek villains.
Mm-hmm. Further confusion, we added a bunch of anthropomorphic animal villains. At YowieCon, we had anime pretty boys.
And by the time we were done, we had nearly 120 portraits in the gallery.
And I tell you, putting up 120 posters on a hotel room wall is a little bit of work. And doing that almost once a month the last year that we ran the parties, yeah, that's a lot of work.
We still have the posters, although half of them are in Texas.
Ooh.
But the rest of the decor we have happily donated to assorted haunted houses.
Yes. And just to continue your general fanish resume, you also are known for promoting cleanliness among fandom in useful ways.
Yes, that would be the same group of people with whom we organized those original shared parties.
It was what I refer to as a don't leave me alone with Kate moment. Because being around Kate Morgenstern results in crazy ideas. And being around Kate Morgenstern involves crazy ideas that actually get acted upon. So while the rest of the gang was in the coffee garden at the San Jose DoubleTree during BayCon, talking up this crazy idea for the party that we were going to throw the next year, Kate and I were running up to our rooms to pick up stuff and talking about how it was kind of odd. It's like you go to conventions, and I'm a big fan of Foamy's Rules for the Masses, particularly the shower rule. We're used to, on the Sunday or Monday of a three-day holiday weekend convention, that there are some people who, well, they might smell a little. But we got there on Friday, and people smelled already. And that wasn't a good thing. So we started talking about, Kate suggested lepers. No, I'm not making this up. How medieval lepers had to carry this stick with bells on it, shaking it, going through the town, going, unclean, unclean, so that people wouldn't touch them and get leprosy. But we should be walking through the halls with a stick that's got hand towels stacked to it, going, clean, clean. And of course, the thing we realized, learning from Monty Python, because you steal from the best.
Of course.
Lepers are only so funny.
Medieval monastic orders, on the other hand, are terrifically funny.
So by the time we got back down to the table, and Kevin and Bridget and everyone, they're regaling us with the stories of these characters for the party that they want to throw the next year.
The Den of Propriety.
Sadists gone bad. Doms turned nice, perverts in pastel, that we were going to do the Great Washed. And we would have terry towel robes and terry towel turbans and preach the gospel of cleanliness. And it went downhill from there.
Of course.
So the next year, of course, we did the Den of Propriety party, which was fun. We did the running around in terry towel robes, chanting Rubber Ducky in plain song.
Badly.
Badly, asking people to take the cleanliness pledge, which Bridget had liberally lifted from the Women's Temperance pledge, and handing out little bars of soap that we had all collected from hotel stays from other conventions to people who would take it, including the gaming room where people started grabbing soaps and passing across the table to their friends.
You missed a part. Everywhere we went, we were asked, have you been to gaming yet? Convention security asked. Convention security asked, have you been to gaming yet?
We went to gaming, and the gamers, like I said, were actually taking our soap and handing it across the table to their friends. So,
and then we went next door to the concert, which is a prearranged appearance.
And Allison Lonsdale took the cleanliness pledge in front of everyone. It was amusing.
Except to one fan who complained that we interrupted the concert, but Allison had specifically invited us, so that complaint was...
Allison used to be an editor for Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, which features rubber ducks on the cover. So when she heard we were doing this, she wanted us there.
So that was explained politely to the concerned fan.
Who was then asked to take a shower, I'm sure.
I have no idea. We didn't find out about it until the next morning. Yeah, so we did that. We had a vibrating rubber duck in a little casket.
Mm-hmm. The awesome duck of power. We were led by the Grand Loofah.
Who was in a purple terry towel robe with loofah epaulets and a purple terry towel turban with a loofah on a stick. Belle, God help her, built a Greek Orthodox shower head crozier with a shepherd's crook with a shower head on the end with a giant Greek Orthodox style sunburst halo around it.
The crozier of cleanliness.
Yes. It was completely mad. And it went over well enough that when we're back to the San Jose World Con. When the San Jose World Con was about to happen, we contacted the head of events and said, can we offer the invocation at the convention? And he looked at us because, well, the head of events was Father John Blaker, who's a Catholic priest. And after a second said, if you can get Rubber Ducky translated into church Latin, sure. On articular resilience, te es una.
Little squishy duck, you're the one.
On articular resilience, jucum jubileum, joy of joys. We actually somewhere have the lyrics and a recording of on articular resilience.
So we came in. We did the chant. I delivered the invocation. And then we found out after we were there that they expected us to do a benediction at the end of the weekend. So
we didn't have to do that much rework for it.
Well, that one I just ad-libbed. I was raised Roman Catholic. I have friends in many different churches, and I've been through lots of different services because I used to sing in church choir. Mm-hmm. So couching a prayer is not difficult.
Tell us about your guests of honor for WesterCon 66.
We're really excited. We had a list of people we wanted to ask. And then, of course, we had the backup list if they said no. But all the people on the first list said yes. So our author guests of honor are Nicola Griffith and Kelly Eskridge from Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Nicola is a moderately prolific novelist and has won a boatload of awards. Has won the Nebula Award, was Hugo nominated, but did not actually win a Hugo, has won the James Tiptree Award for promotion of feminism in science fiction, has won the Lambda Literary Award, and her most recent book is actually not fantasy or science fiction. She just finished a historical novel set in medieval England that has been picked up by a prestigious small university literary press. So, I mean, she's got chops on all kinds of stuff and is a very good writer. Her partner, Kelly, is also a novelist. Her debut novel was a New York Times notable novel. She's done a lot of short fiction and done some screenwriting. She's an accomplished editor and is the chair of the Clarion West Writers Workshop Board, which the Clarion Workshops are the premier intensive science fiction and fantasy writing workshops. So that's our authors. They're good. They're cool.
Praise the authors.
Of course. Our artist guest of honor. An important thing with the WesterCon guests is that they're from the Western region. A number of years ago, we met Eric Schanauer. He's a comic book artist, an excellent comic book artist, and has been working in Wizard of Oz related projects forever and is tied into a whole world of Wizard of Oz fan conventions. Well, actually, only one of them, but it's been going for 40 years, and it's the kind that people will spend $500 to go to for the weekend because it includes the your room and board at a very, very nice retreat center near Santa Cruz, but is also the author and artist of Age of Bronze, which is an Eisner Award-winning comic book, historical comic book about the Trojan War.
Oh.
It's insanely researched. Eric has now has contacts with the archaeologists who are doing the current digs at Troy, is pretty much at this point steeped in all of the academic journals about the new analysis of Trojan artifacts and the new digs going on at Troy, is in correspondence with all of the academics who are doing the work so that he can do a very solidly historically based historical fantasy comic book. Far less fantasy than history.
Yeah. Now, we've also invited Eric's partner, David Maxine, who runs Hungry Tiger Press, to be our small press special guest. David is the power behind WinkyCon, the Oz convention that Andy mentioned.
Well, he's the head of programming.
He's the head of programming, but he's the one who posts everything on Facebook about it. So we do want to have some focus on small press at WesterCon. So we decided, since we were going to have both of them there anyway, we ought to feature David's talents.
Yeah. Hungry Tiger is, of course, named after the Hungry Tiger from the Oz books, and they specialize in Oz-related publications, comic books, new Oz novels, and there's actually kind of a small cottage industry in that now. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know this until I started actually, I've known Eric and David for a few years now. I didn't know this until I started looking into their references when we were thinking about inviting them. Hungry Tiger Press published a double CD set of music from one of the very, very early Wizard of Oz Broadway musicals that was actually Grammy nominated in the Best Historical Album category about 10 years back. Didn't win, but you know, for something specialist like that, actually getting a Grammy nomination is a big deal.
Right. At least it was nominated. Wow. Okay. I
mean, this is not like Homer Simpson and the tipping guys. Oh, just a Grammy. No, this is a Grammy that people actually care about.
And then, of course, there are fan guests, which some of your listeners may know about.
Or may not. Fan guests back in the early days of conventions, and considering this is the 66th WesterCon, it is the oldest convention in the North American West. It's actually the third oldest convention because PhilCon in Philadelphia started before WorldCon, but it's the second oldest traveling convention. Back in the old days when this convention started, the people who got invited to be fan guests of conventions were fanzine writers who you got their fanzine in the mail, you exchanged letters with, you had a whole relationship in the letter or comments sections of the fanzines, but you might never get to see because they're, well, all the way across the country, and that's not something a normal person can afford to travel to.
And there was no internet.
There was no internet. Transcontinental flights were hideously expensive. Transcontinental travel by car, that's also, there was no interstate. But for a convention, you would invite a fanzine writer, fan editor that you knew to come out and be your fan guest so that you could go and, oh, have drinks together. And we looked at this and said, let's go with the modern side of things. In a lot of ways, the big boom in podcasting is kind of like the big boom in fanzines 70 years ago. Let's invite some podcasters to be our fan guests of honor. And we met the three who rule from Radio Free Scaro at Gallifrey One, an LA Doctor Who convention. And we're really impressed with the way that they and the other podcasters in Doctor Who fandom have a really strong community going, that they all get together two nights before the convention starts in the hotel lobby. You walk into the lobby. There's a very tall granite table, very long, with electrical outlets in the middle that are surrounded by laptops and blue snowball microphones. Mm-hmm. And Wednesday night before Gallifrey 1 is what is jokingly referred to as Podcest, where the podcasters all interview each other. And then spend the rest of the weekend with the same kind of setups, interviewing convention guests and building up material for the rest of their year.
Now, be polite to actually mention them by name, dear.
What? Really? No. Radio Free Scaro started with Warren Fry from Vancouver and Stephen Shapansky from Edmonton. And their friend Chris was involved at the beginning, but wasn't actually on the bill. And he was in Edmonton. And after a very short time, he got billing and it became the three who rule.
Mm-hmm. That would be Chris.
Chris Burgess from Nova Scotia, who has now since moved back out west again.
Fortunately for our budget,
because flying someone to Sacramento from Amherst, Nova Scotia would not be cheap. But the three who rule from Radio Free Scaro, who do a wonderfully irreverent Doctor Who podcast and who have introduced us to a number of other really, really fabulous Doctor Who podcasters.
The fun part was we invited them and they were very flattered, but said, we'll have to get back to you until our friends, Meta Heaton and Brian Little, took them aside and said, no, you don't understand. They pay for you to come to the convention. You don't have to spend your own money.
This is a guest of honor gig. You get your transit, you get your hotel, you get a per diem to pay for your food.
Right. This is a real guest of honor gig.
Right.
This isn't a you come out to the convention on your own nickel. You may still do stuff on your own nickel, but the big stuff's covered.
Mm-hmm. And we do need to mention that one reason we're able to bring all three of them to WesterCon is thanks to a generous grant from Renovation.
All right.
The WorldCon in Reno this past year.
Which is actually where this podcast started, because we were the official podcast for Renovation.
Well, you and I were the official podcasters. We didn't really have a podcast that had a name or anything at that point.
We were guys that were running around with the recording equipment at that point.
That sounds like podcasters.
Yes, that would be us.
Well, if somebody wanted to be involved in WesterCon 66, what do they want to do?
Well, funny you should ask.
Well, actually, the only thing is this may not actually air until after our first open committee meeting.
True.
But on July 29th, we're actually having an open meeting at the Hilton. Mm-hmm. By Arden Fair, and we're especially inviting Sacramento fandom to come out and meet us and talk to us about what they'd like to do. If you can't come to that meeting, or you're hearing this after said meeting, which is quite likely, if you drop an email to volunteers@westercon66.org, you will get a response from us, because we really want to have lots of local fandom involved. That's what makes WesterCon unique, is it's a mix of traveling out-of-towners and local fandom getting to meet each other and build something new.
And maybe some guests that you wouldn't normally get at your local conventions, and just generally fun in a perfect world.
If you don't necessarily want to volunteer, but you want to reach us, you can drop a note to chairs@westercon66.org.
And you can always check out the website at www.westercon66.org, where you will find links to our presence on Facebook and on Google+ and on Twitter. I'm sorry, we don't have a MySpace page. Not going to happen.
And you can find our Agent 66 secret Dakota wheel application.
Yes. Do you want to say anything else about Agent 66?
When we were in the business meeting talking about whether we could pull together a convention on such short notice, since we hadn't been a formal bid, one of the points we made was that when we did Costume Con, Andy and I ran everywhere for 5 years.
It was a lot of our faces in front of people in cities in unknown places.
And if WesterCon 66 is going to work, it has to be all of the people who say they're so enthused acting as WesterCon's agents on their behalf to do it. So from everyone being our agent to make it happen was a short leap to the idea of secret agents. And Agent 66 is very euphonious. So we are, of course, running the Who is Agent 66 campaign. We do have, you can either print it out and put together as a craft project your decoder wheel, or there's an online app that's exactly the same decoder wheel.
Yes, Agent 66 is missing, and we need to find him before July 8th, 2013.
So what are you going to do with him if you catch him? Are you going
That's a good question. No, no, no. He's our agent. He's our deep cover agent that we've lost track of.
Oh, I see. So yeah, you need to issue the recall code so that he remembers who he is. And that
exactly.
Sort of thing.
But his confidential files were hacked and are missing.
Ooh, okay.
So anyone.
Yes, this is a lot of backstory.
So anyone could be Agent 66.
And you might not even know it.
It's a deep cover agent.
Very deep. All right. So anything else that you want to grace us with before we wrap up?
I don't know. It sounds like a Dumbledore moment, and I should say a series of unconnected words.
Actually, there is one thing. If you are at a convention and you see mysterious signs saying that such and such a room is an ordinary hotel room,
go and check it out.
Go and check it out and meet our ordinary bartender.
All right. Thank you guys very much for appearing, assuming that any of this recorded, on the Jackalcast.
Thanks, guys.
And thank you to you.